This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho. H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the R-O-C.
Welcome into the Naked Bootleg Podcast presented by the Boston Herald. Week 2, here we go. Pats, Saints kicking off another week of NFL football. But before we get into the Patriots game this Sunday against New Orleans, Adam, we wanted to talk a little bit about the stink fest that was that Thursday night football game last night and kind of just the struggles offensively mainly around the NFL right now.
Well, I think it's interesting if you contrast it to what the Chiefs were able to do against the Patriots. I know a lot of people, when they see an offense like the Chiefs, sort of derisively call it either a high school offense or a college offense, but it worked, and it was well executed. And I think a lot of people that are only used to watching NFL football don't realize how creative some of the offenses at the lower levels can be and how they can be how they can sort of flow up into the pro game in a positive way. And you sort of saw that with KC. A lot of their concepts are, you know, not traditional NFL concepts that have been used recently. And, you know, when you see offenses that try to plug a round peg in a square hole, or whatever the, you know, saying is, you know, you can be more creative with how you use your offense to accommodate certain quarterback skills. And I think you look at the Houston game last night and, you know,
perfect example of that.
Like, you know, Deshaun, it's no coincidence that Deshaun Watson, you know, puts up unreal numbers at Clemson against incredible defenses like Alabama or any ACC defense every week. And then he comes to a system like Houston, which is, you know, here's what, you know, you got to adjust to what we do. And I feel like in the NFL, quarterback development is, all right, here, come to our system, learn it, rather than, okay, here's this talented guy we have, and we're going to build what we have around you. And I think a good example of that that going the other way is what McVay did with Jared Goff in Los Angeles the first week. He's vocal about building his offense around his quarterback skills rather than the other way around. And I think that's a sort of a league-wide problem, this sort of hubris of coaches or this sort of arrogance that, like, look, my way works, you have to fit it. And it's not that way in college and high school, and I think it's a problem.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I was still watching that game last night. It was just disappointing to see both teams who have plenty of talent on offense just be so stagnant, you know. And a lot of reasons for that. Obviously, the offensive line play has gotten blamed a lot of the time over the last week. The new CBA and the practice restrictions and stuff like that have been blamed. I'm starting to point the fingers at the coaches here. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Deshaun Watson's out there for the Texans last night, and the Texans are trying to make him into Tom Brady, right? He's standing in the pocket and in shotgun, and he's scanning the field, and he can't get off his first read because he is in his second NFL game, and he's just not ready for that. And instead of, you know, putting him in bootlegs or run pass options or design QB runs and stuff like that, the only rushing yards he created were off of scrambles on his own. And he's out back there in the pocket, and he's holding on to the ball, and his coaches are telling him that you need to scan the field and find your open option based on your reads and based on the defense and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, I understand that maybe Deshaun Watson as a first-round pick should be at that point of his career, but he's not. And you could easily make it easier on Watson to just move the pocket around a little bit, do the run pass option stuff, give him some bootlegs, maybe some quarterback runs. And I've heard a lot of, it was a short week and they practiced, they played on Sunday and then they played on Thursday and they didn't have enough time to put that in the playbook. Those aren't complicated plays to put in an NFL playbook. That's not new to anybody in football. They've been doing it their entire lives, from high school on up. They've been doing stuff like, a bootleg passes and all that type of stuff. So to say that it's not enough time to put it in the playbook is garbage. I like Bill O'Brien a lot. I liked him when he was with the Patriots, but lately, his coaching has been subpar. Marvin Lewis on the other sideline, obviously we know all about that. And, that's a team, Cincinnati, who can't score a touchdown in two home games to start the season, that has an all-pro receiver in A.J. Green, a good tight end, a stable of running backs. They just drafted John Ross at the 8th pick in the draft. They have plenty of weapons. They have as many weapons in Cincinnati as they might have on any other team in the league right now. Right. And they can't even score a touchdown. That's not – you can talk about how bad Andy Dalton was. You can talk about how bad the offensive line was. By the end of the day, the coaching staff needs to put these guys in a position to succeed.
Yeah, and I really feel like, some coaches do get that. Like when the Panthers went 15-1 a couple years ago, they ran an offense that was creative. It was, it fit what Cam Newton does and what their personnel did. When Prescott came to the Cowboys, they did put in those run pass options. I mean, you can't say, I don't like hearing coaches say, he came from this system in college and we have to work with him and try to, get him to do this when, it makes our jobs harder. No, if the guy works in a certain system, you can just run that system and keep it working. There's so much, arrogance about, what works for us. Well, it doesn't. If you're going to draft a guy like Deshaun Watson and expect him to, like you said, be Tom Brady, it's unrealistic. And then why are you drafting him in the first place when he's obviously somebody who can thrive so much more in a system that fits his skill set?
Right.
So I just feel like it's lazy coaching. I feel it's stubbornness. And I feel like it's just not creative. And, when people say, oh, this college offense, this high school offense, that, well, they score points. It's the same players. I know the level is different. But, and you say, the defenses are better than the NFL. Well, yeah, but they're also, more conducive in the NFL to, having receivers, get open with the contact rules and everything like that. The NFL does everything it can to make offenses work, and you still can't put something competent together. That's on you.
Yeah, I mean, in both teams last night are perfect examples of that, and it's just happening all across the league. I feel like with these coaches that they're getting these new style quarterbacks, from these spread offenses in college that do a lot more running and are more athletic maybe than some of the other guys and less pocket passers, and they're just trying to fit it into their own system instead of curtailing it around them. And I, not to harp on too much giving credit to Belichick and the Patriots coaching staff, but last year with Jacoby Brissett, when he had to start, the Patriots pretty much changed a lot of the things in their offense for that Houston game to make Jacoby Brissett more comfortable in the offense. It wasn't just like the same offense that they rolled out with Tom Brady, or Jimmy Garoppolo the week before. They had some options. They had some running plays designed for him. They had little wrinkles in there that made it easier of a game for a guy like Brissett to play. Any good coaching staff does that. You have to look at your talent, you have to evaluate your team, and you have to curtail your coaching to that. You can't do it the other way unless you're just going to draft specifically for specific traits that fit your schemes offensively or defensively, which you can do. But at the same time, the best player is the best player. Deshaun Watson's a young quarterback. Andy Dalton obviously is a not a good quarterback. I think we all know that by now with Dalton. But either way, both those teams were just inept play calling all night long, I thought. And especially in Cincinnati, to not score a touchdown in two games in Cincinnati is nothing to do with the offensive line or Andy Dalton. That is all to do with what's going on that sideline. And and Marvin Lewis will continue to go on, I'm sure. The beat will go on with him, and that's that.
Yeah, but, along that point with your Patriots point earlier, and the one you made as well earlier, that Houston game was a Thursday night game.
Right, exactly. That's what
like, you tell me it can be done. It can be done. And it's not rocket science. I mean, it just makes your job more difficult, and, you know, you just don't want to go that extra mile to change. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, Jared Goff is really a good example, who is quickly becoming one of my favorite players to watch now, because I'm just rooting for the guy to do good after last year. And you know, McVay comes in and he looks like a different quarterback because he made him comfortable right off the bat in this system that he was running. And now Goff looks like the number one pick from last year's draft. You know, the ball's flying out of his hand and he's throwing with confidence and accuracy and all that stuff. So, you know, coaching is not dead. I just think that it's flatlining a little bit in some, you know, teams around the NFL. So,
You know, when you're developing a quarterback, the smart thing to do is to ease him in slowly. You don't just roll him in and have him sink or swim. You know, with you try to build the confidence with things that he knows how to do well, and then expand. And I don't think people are doing that. I think they're just saying, okay, see if you can do it.
Yeah, that's exactly what the Texans did last night with poor Deshaun Watson, who ended up winning the game because the Bengals are such a dumpster fire right now. But in reality, I mean, he had a pretty awful game at quarterback other than the run that, you know, scored the only touchdown of the game, which was pretty nice. But, I mean, man, it just looked like he was back there surveying the field like he was Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, and he was way in over his head. And it just wasn't going to be conducive at all to the type of player that he was. And Bill O'Brien is going to have to, you know, he's going to have to do something different. You mentioned Kansas City. They run the veer. They run an option offense a lot of the time. That is from 1965. They are bringing back the veer, and they did not care. You know, if it works, it works. And it worked against the Patriots, and I think it will work all season against teams, because no matter what, if you run an offense well, if you execute well, more times than not, it's going to work out for you. It just all around the league, we just are seeing crappy play on offense, to be frank. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, none of it has to do with talent. You know, there's plenty of talent in the NFL now. There's more talent in this league than there ever has been. And some of it does have to do with the new CBA. I'm sure that the padded practices for these linemen is you know, maybe suffering a little bit, but, you know, that's coaching too. Draft and develop guys. You know, Cincinnati is known for that, and they've drafted and developed or tried to develop a bunch of offensive linemen to kind of bring in this new wave of offensive linemen in Cincinnati with Whitworth and Zeitler and those guys gone. And it has still basically been the same. You know, in 2 weeks, it's been terrible. And it's, you know, it just makes no sense to me why we aren't just starting to point the fingers at least at the coaches, and we're still caught up on, you know, it being Tom Savage or, you know, Deshaun Watson's fault or Andy Dalton's fault or Scott Tolzien's fault or whoever it may be. You know, at the end of the day, those guys are not necessarily Hall of Fame quarterbacks, but they're good enough. Andy Dalton is certainly good enough to make throws that he didn't make last night. And that's definitely on him, but it's also on Marvin Lewis and that coaching staff. You have A.J. Green on your team. You have a stable of running backs.
Yeah.
You got to be able to get the ball in the end zone. You know, you put A.J. Green on the Patriots and watch out. And I feel bad for A.J. Green. He's not a free agent until 2020. He's kind of locked in there for a while. You know, his career is kind of wilting away there in Cincinnati. But yeah. Anyways, let's move on to the Saints and the Pats now. We got that off our chest. Let's start with Drew Brees and Tom Brady. This matchup, one of the most historic quarterback matchups we've ever seen. Most combined touchdown passes, most combined passing yards for a quarterback matchup. You know, both guys struggled a little bit last week.
Yeah, I have a little bit more hope that Tom Brady can recover than Drew, because I honestly don't think the Saints, you know, me and Kevin Duffy were talking about this earlier. The Saints don't have the same type of weapons on the outside that they usually have. And so it seemed, when I was watching that Vikings game, it seemed like they didn't really have an identity yet, the Saints. And you could say to a certain extent that the Pats are struggling with the same issues. But I, you know, Ted Ginn, Michael Thomas, you know, those guys I think are okay. But, you know, outside of that, I feel like Brees doesn't have as much to work with in the passing game. I feel like both teams are going to have to incorporate the running backs as receivers a lot to eventually get to this point where they're usually at. But in fairness, with the Saints, Minnesota's defense is fantastic.
Great defense.
it's a lot better than what the Patriots' defense is right now. So I don't know how adequately we can judge that. And also the Saints are having a little bit of a offensive line issues with injuries, but you know, obviously they're both incredible quarterbacks. They'll figure things out by the end of the season. I just think Drew is in a little bit more of a tougher spot because just for a number of issues that I highlighted there.
Yeah, just to get into the Saints offense a little bit, I mean, I think though your point about their weapons is well said. You know, Mike, outside of Michael Thomas, and if you want to throw a guy like Ted Ginn or Kobe Fleener into that mix, they have a lot of guys that are kind of one-trick ponies, right? I mean, like Tommy Lee Lewis is a speedster who's super fast. You watch him on film and he's incredibly fast, but he's just a one, you know, a go route and that's it. A guy like Alvin Kamara, who is talented but is still a rookie, you know, he's a good receiving back already probably, but between the tackles, it's not going to get it done. Brandon Coleman's another one of their receivers who's kind of just a speedster. Michael Thomas is really the only consistent option that they have to go to right now that Drew Brees can really lock into and get a big first down or you know, a big play out of in the passing game, unless they're going to beat somebody over the top like they did catch Minnesota once with Tommy Lee Lewis in that game last week. But overall, you know, they don't really have very many multiple threats. You know, they have guys that are good at one thing. You know, Adrian Peterson, for example, who I thought actually looked pretty good when he got the opportunities early on in that game, but he is going to be off the field if they're down or if they're in a passing situation. Right. You know, he's one-dimensional. Mark Ingram is, you know, Mark Ingram. He's an okay running back, but he's nothing special. Kamara, like I said, I think is up and coming, but, you know, still has a long ways to go. And you pointed to the struggles on the offensive line and the injuries. You know, they're down two tackles at this point. They're starting a rookie at left tackle because Teron Armstead is hurt. They're starting Bryce Harris at right tackle because Stripe, their captain, is hurt. So, you know, a lot of injuries up front. And Drew Brees, you know, as good as he is, and you never want to, you know, kind of like Tom Brady, you never want to doubt Drew Brees on a football field. Under pressure last week, just really fell apart. And, you know, I don't know if the Patriots have the same front and same capabilities to get that pressure on them like Minnesota did, but they should with this offensive line of New Orleans. You know, it's been a shambles in New Orleans on the offensive line over the last couple of years. Guys like Trey Flowers, for example, he should have a huge game.
Yeah.
In this game, and he should be able to get pressure on Brees, maybe not to the same extent that Minnesota did, but, you know, basically when Drew Brees was pressured last week, he turned into Andy Dalton. His passer rating was around 50, you know, and he was not very good under pressure, and it was mainly because of the things that we've already hit on. that, you know, that he doesn't really have a hot route receiver other than Michael Thomas that he can get the ball out to when he's under pressure in those situations. And Minnesota did a good job with Xavier Rhodes mainly shutting down Michael Thomas in that game, although I thought Thomas had some opportunities if the pressure had held up, but it didn't. And, you know, this game to me overall is this is gut check time for the Patriots in the sense that they should beat this team easily. Yeah. You know, they should really handle New Orleans in this game. Minnesota did. They ended up only putting 29 points up on them on offense, but they did whatever they wanted on offense. Yeah. Sam Bradford did whatever he wanted. You know, this should be, they should score 40 on this team and they should win comfortably.
Yeah. And I think your point about having sort of the one trick ponies on offense for the Saints is really key because, you know, that's, you know, their offense with the amount of, you know, formationing they do and personnel groupings and stuff like that, that only really is effective if there is some versatility with the personnel, you know, because if you come out in a different personnel grouping and it's Adrian Peterson back there and you know that when he's back there, he's going to run up the middle, then there's no mystery as to what's happening. And, you know, you can formation and, you know, change things all you want, but if none of that is creating any confusion for the defense, then it's not worth doing at all. So I think that, you know, their whole running back thing is a little jumbled. I mean, you watch that game, and when Peterson came in, you sort of knew it was coming. And when Kamara or Ingram was coming in, you knew that, you know, they had a little bit more versatility. But, you know, it's just – they don't have an identity right now. The pieces aren't meshing. And like you said, with, you know, if we're going to take a larger view of this, the Patriots really should win this game. I know Minnesota is a great, you know, great looking team. I was very impressed with Minnesota. And I know that New Orleans plays much better at home than they do on the road. And, you know, that will factor into, but I honestly think, you know, if you watch those two games, you can't come away with it thinking that New Orleans is really the better team. So I think, you know, and honestly, like watching that Saints secondary, it's, there's so many either new pieces or young guys that there were just free guys running wide open in certain situations in that game. And that, you know, I just threw up those stats early in the week. I mean, the yards per attempt for the Saints last year and this year, and it just seems like forever, is always so high. Big plays are bound to happen against this team. And you know, say what you will about what the Pats were able to not accomplish last week. They're capable of, and their weapons are good enough to really go off in this game in a really big way.
Yeah, I agree. Before we get too much into the Pats offense on this, I wanted to talk about Kamara quickly because we have talked a lot about the Patriots struggling to cover running backs out of the backfield, and he's a guy that is pretty quick and definitely can make plays out of the backfield as a receiver. I do think it's an issue, and it's something to watch in this game because I think that the Patriots are going to win this game comfortably on the scoreboard. So these little things that we can see, you know, do they improve covering running backs out of the backfield? And Kamara is a good kind of barometer test to see if they can do that. He got open a couple times against Minnesota, didn't get the ball a lot, but you could see the skill there. What do you think is, you know, the plan here? Is it Jordan Richards? Is it are we going to see a little bit of Alondon Roberts, more of him, or David Harris, you know, to cover these guys, and but also to you know, not give up as many yards against the run.
Well, I think it's going to be probably one of the biggest questions of the game. Is, you know, I'm sure Sean Payton looked at the Chiefs game and said, all right, well, if they can do that with this rookie. We've got a rookie who's pretty good too. We've got Mark Ingram who's been doing it for years. Let's test that. So I think you're going to see the Saints go after those matchups and try to exploit those early and often. I think that's going to be a big part of their game plan. So
yeah.
As far as what the Pats do, I'm not sure. Like, you know, I don't, you know, it obviously the Jordan Richards is a sort of like an outside linebacker thing didn't really work at all. I don't think it worked in the preseason either. You know, so, you know, I think they're going to try to see what – well, and the other thing about this, too, is now with Dante Hightower looking like he would be out for this game, then, you know, we'll see when the practice report comes out. But that changes things, too. So I think, you know, I think they might try to do what they've done in the past, which is have Kyle Van Noy handle some of those responsibilities. I think out of there – linebackers, he's probably the best option. You know, you can say, you know, what you want about him being a good option or not, but I mean, I think he's their best chance of, you know, sort of, you know, using that. You could see some more zone. There's plenty of ways to counteract it. I don't think there's just going to be one set way of defending running backs out of the backfield, but I do think if you know. One thing I think I would probably look toward is maybe trying to use Patrick Chung more in that role, because, you know, I don't think the Saints are capable of really, you know, using a bunch of receivers right now like they have in the past, and just rolling guys out like that. I think you can use Patrick Chung in the role that Jordan Richards was used last week, and using more of your corners in other situations. So, yeah, I think, and plus Patrick Chung is one of the best tacklers on the team. So, and that was a huge problem with covering these running backs, was yards after the catch. So, you know, I don't know if that they'll do that, but I think that's, you know, a pretty decent option, other than what they usually do is, with, you know, have Kyle Van Noy try to turn that.
Right. Yeah, because the two ways that Drew Brees and the Saints offense, you know, scare this Patriots defense in my mind are the short passing game and the running backs. You know, Drew Brees within 10 yards last week, 20 of 26, 142 yards, really obviously a Drew Brees type game in terms of what he did closer to the line of scrimmage. He's going to be able to pick those underneath zones apart, similarly to what Alex Smith did last week, I think, for some of this game. You know, he's Drew Brees. He's still a good player. He's still got enough around him, I would say, to put up some yards that way on those underneath routes. And then covering the running backs, I think, are the two things, because Michael Thomas is really your only real threat, consistent threat on the outside. I'm sure the Patriots are going to double him or give a lot of attention to stopping Michael Thomas in this game, and he'll probably have a similar game, I would think, to what he had last week against Minnesota, which was still impactful, but not, you know, didn't go over 100 yards or anything like that. You know, with Brees and these running backs, one thing that I saw out there that I thought was a decent idea was to move Kyle Van Noy to the weak side of the formation and put Alondon Roberts and David Harris, either one of those guys, in the middle. Van Noy played a lot in the middle last week, middle linebacker position. Maybe you put him on the weak side, put him more on the edge, and let him cover guys out of the backfield, like you mentioned, and leave the run stopping to somebody like a bigger linebacker like Alondon Roberts or David Harris. I don't know how much David Harris has left in the tank, but that's something to look for, I would think, in this game. Especially if Hightower is not in the lineup, I would expect to see Van Noy more at an outside linebacker position instead of inside like he played against KC. Let's move over to the offense side of the ball, where we both are in agreement, obviously, that the Patriots offense should hang a lot of points on this Saints defense, who just made Sam Bradford look like Tom Brady out there last week. So mainly, you know, what do you think the Saints try to do here? Obviously, Dennis Allen, the defensive coordinator in New Orleans, he likes to blitz a little bit, but he blitzed a little bit against Bradford last week, and Bradford absolutely torched them every single time that they did. I would assume that Brady would be able to do something similar to that.
Yeah, I would, you know, if I were the Patriots, I would do my best to get the running backs involved in the passing game as much as possible. I think they did fall in love with the vertical game a little too much, especially when they fell behind last week. And especially when Amendola came out, too, that was, you know, it sort of feels like they became one-dimensional in that regard after that. So I would think for the Patriots to strive for that balance in terms of what spots in the field that they can hit in the passing game. That I don't think we'll see again this week is I don't think you'll see Rob Gronkowski sort of have a, you know, be held in check. You know, I think this is another game where, you know, he's just not going to look like the same guy. I mean, I think he did a good job of breaking it down on Pat's Pulpit, but, you know, I don't think, you know, not every team has an Eric Berry, you know, and I don't think the Saints are one of those teams, you know, so I feel like they will try to be physical with him. They'll try to chip him at every spot. I sort of wrote about this morning, but I don't think they'll be as effective. I think Gronkowski is going to be more of a weapon this game. I think he needs to be, and I think, you know, making sure that they still have those short and intermediate routes covered, or not covered, but you know, that the Pats make sure to, you know, throw those plays and go after that and not just be a vertical team like they were at parts of that game against the Chiefs. I think that's sort of the key to really lighting up the Saints defense.
Yeah, you know, I wrote about Gronk because I was getting sick of all the hot takes coming out about how he was done and you know, looked slow and all this type of stuff. And it's, you know, on the surface, yeah, he might have looked a little bit slow when you're watching it live and he only has two catches and all that stuff. But, you know, really the Chiefs just absolutely, you know, bodied him, for lack of a better term, for that entire game. You know, he was hit, he was chipped, he was held, he was all sorts of stuff in that game, and they did everything that they could, to their credit, to slow him down. And that was, in my estimation, when I watched it back and really watched him closely, why, you know, he was slow was because the Saints were, the Chiefs were literally trying to slow him down.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't one of those situations where Gronk was isolated one-on-one with Eric Berry and Eric Berry was just shutting him down by himself, you know. It wasn't one of those. It was a definite two to three guys a play type attention to Gronkowski on every single play, including linebackers that were just bodying him at the line of scrimmage a lot of the time. The one catch that he did make, not the back shoulder, but the other one on 3rd and 10, he fights through a chip block, gets up on Eric Berry, separates at the top of the route, makes the catch in traffic, and gets the first down.
Right.
You know, like I wrote, there's just not that many guys on this planet Earth that can make that play.
Right.
That can run through all that traffic, still make the catch, hang on to the ball, get past the sticks, get the first down. There just isn't a lot of athletes in the NFL that can do that. And to see Gronk do that, to see him go after that ball in the end zone and dive for it, I know he didn't catch it. If he did catch it, the narrative of his day would have been so much different. If he has a touchdown and 55 yards of offense and the Patriots win that game, totally different opinion, I would think, coming out of that game on Rob Gronkowski. There were two clear bright spots, I thought, from a Patriots perspective from that Chiefs game offensively, in Gronk and Brandon Cooks. I thought both of those guys, Cooks for his first game as a Pat, I thought played really well. Was a factor out there, drew a couple flags, got deep a couple times. You know, I thought he was a factor and he played really well. Those two guys, I think, are fine. I think Brady's fine. And once they figure out some of the cleaning up some of the underneath stuff, I think that they're going to be perfectly fine on offense. And in this game, when you look at the Saints defense, they really have one, maybe two guys that are impact players, right? You know, Cam Jordan is obviously the number one. And then Sheldon Rankins, who is a first-round pick, 12th overall, a couple of years ago, is starting to become that player, and he's looked pretty good against Minnesota at times as a, you know, one-gap defensive tackle. Those two guys are really the only two guys that you circle and you say, okay, those could ruin the Patriots' day offensively. This secondary is garbage. It's just garbage. Mm-hmm. And it's going to get better. I like some of the players. You know, Marshon Lattimore, I think, is an interesting player, although I don't think that he's necessarily worth the 13th overall pick, I think, is where they took him. But he's a good player. Marcus Williams is a guy that got a lot of Daron Harmon comparisons coming out of college, a really rangy free safety that can, you know, cover the back end. But they're starting three rookies. AJ Klein was an absolute liability at linebacker in coverage against Minnesota. They torched him in coverage. PJ Williams is their slot corner, who is okay, but again, I think Adam Thielen absolutely took him to school most of that game last week, and running a lot of very similar routes that Chris Hogan runs on a regular basis in the Patriots offense. I think Thielen's a little bit better of a player than Hogan probably, but Hogan and Thielen play a very similar role in the slot to each other. So I think that this defense really just doesn't scare me at all on paper.
Yeah, and it goes back to, you know, a lot of what the Chiefs did is a lot of what most teams want to do against Gronk. You know, they want to be physical with them, but in order to do it effectively, you have to be organized and, you know, and the whole team has to be on board with it. And I feel like the Saints aren't capable of that right now because
they just don't have the players in the secondary. I mean, who's going to do that? Kenny Vaccaro?
They don't have the players, and also they don't really have the organizational structure. I mean, they couldn't really figure out what they were doing a lot of times against the Vikings. And also, you know, another thing the Patriots could do to combat that sort of thing is to line Gronkowski up wide in certain situations, like, and have them, you know, have him not so boxed in the middle of the field. I'm sure we're going to see some of that because they've done that in the past. And I just sort of feel like, in general, a lot of people haven't given the Chiefs enough credit for you know how they made the Pats look bad in certain aspects of that game, and you're not gonna see the same type of defense out of the Saints. They're just not capable. But you know, it's not to say that, you know, Pats could run into problems here and there. The one thing I will say, I did like what Brandon Cooks did in that opening game. It's not a sustainable way to move the ball if you're this Pats offense. He did make some big plays. He drew some flags and he got open, but at the end of the day, those are the lower percentage throws, even as open as he gets. And you're asking more of your offensive line to buy more time for Brady. The only way this offense really finds its bread and butter again is replacing the Edelman's, you know, short and intermediate passing game and getting, you know, yards after catch. And so that means, you know, either having Cooks do more of that or having other guys fill that role and having the running back get off in that respect. So, you know, I think it just sort of falls upon McDaniel sort of to get creative again and sort of find guys who can do that in order to make Cooks's sort of deep threat vertical ability more dangerous and more sustainable.
Yeah, I agree with that point. I think that one of the things that we were all clamoring for after that Chiefs game was for this Patriots offense to move more horizontally again.
Yeah,
you know, everything was very, very vertical, and they have three guys now in Hogan, Dorsett, and Cooks who are vertical threats. You know, there's no getting around that. But I do think that they can use those guys' speed in a different way that would A, get the ball out of Tom Brady's hands a little bit quicker, but also B, more high percentage than what they were doing against Kansas City, and also more what Brady likes to do, you know, what Brady is comfortable doing. As much as I want to see Tom Brady throw it back to 2007 and start throwing, you know, 60-yard bombs to Cooks like you did to Randy Moss, he was a lot younger than he was now in 2007. He was 30 years old. You know, he was much younger quarterback in the prime of his athletic and physical career. Nowadays, he takes every ounce of effort for him to get the ball, you know, that far down the field to a guy like Brandon Cooks, the one big catch that they did connect on. You saw Brady load up to throw it, and he threw it with every last ounce of, you know, arm strength that he has at 40 years old. And that's not to say that he's bad or anything like that, obviously, but Cooks is a really good receiver to use in multiple ways. That's why they give him a first round pick for him. And I would just love to see the offense become more vertical. Where are the crossing routes? Where are those types of routes over the middle that create traffic, that create confusion in the middle of the defense, and really the mesh concept, stuff like that, that really can confuse other defenses. We saw it in the third preseason game, and I know Julian Edelman was out there, but we saw it right off the bat with Chris Hogan moving horizontally across the formation and getting a lot of really big plays off after the catch. I'd love to see that back again in this game. I think that they have a really good opportunity to get into a rhythm in this game against a really pretty terrible Saints secondary. Yeah. The Saints did a decent job at stopping the run up the middle. They got gashed a little bit on the edges by Dalvin Cook, who had a really good game as a good rookie running back to add to this incredible rookie class of running backs. But anyways, the offensive scheme for Minnesota was very horizontal. Adam Thielen definitely had some big plays, had over 150 yards receiving, but a lot of it came after the catch and were in situations where he beats his man instantly and they get the ball in his hands in space and he's off. Those are the types of things that, you know, we used to see Chris Hogan do. And, you know, I think we still can see guys like Chris Hogan and Brandon Cooks do. That one play that they had with Cooks where he ran across the formation and he caught it and he got matched up against the linebacker and he just smoked him to the sideline and gained a nice bit of yardage. Those are the types of plays that we're talking about, you know?
Yeah.
The stuff that makes it easier, gets the ball out of Tom Brady's hands faster, and is more what we are used to seeing. Obviously, we're not going to see Julian Edelman in the slot anymore. We're not going to see the little option routes inside unless Amendola is healthy in this offense right now. But that doesn't mean that they can't still attack the middle of the field, that they can't still get the ball out of Brady's hands quickly, and they still can't, you know, create yards after the catch opportunities. And I think that this Saints defense, you mentioned it, they really were a mess in terms of approach last week. They had no idea how to stop Minnesota, and they tried just about everything, and none of it worked. The main thing that I took away from that game is that they're really only hope against the Patriots is to just drop, you know, 7-8 guys into a zone coverage and just pray that they can cover back, you know, the back end. They're not going to be able to stop the Patriots covering in man right now. You know, Marshawn Lattimore just isn't there yet. Maybe he'll be there in a year, but he's a rookie cornerback, even though he's a first round pick. It takes a while it's a tough position to learn in the NFL. You know, you look at a guy like Jalen Ramsey, who's one of the best cornerback prospects to come out in the draft in a long time, probably since like Patrick Peterson, and he took about half the season to really become a factor in that Jacksonville secondary. Lattimore is nowhere near the prospect and is going to take even longer. I think that that's really the only approach, which is against really what Dennis Allen likes to do. He's a big blitzer. He likes to bring blitzes from odd angles. He likes to blitz from the secondary. I was watching Gronk's press conference yesterday, and he mentioned, you know, safety blitzes and stuff like that as little wrinkles that the Saints like to throw at you. But Sam Bradford and the Vikings receivers separated instantly on the man coverage off the blitzes, and Bradford threw for 17 yards per attempt against the blitz. Just absolutely torched them. It's not going to work against the Patriots. People think that the Patriots linebackers are slow. Wait until you see the Saints linebackers. They're even slower, believe it or not. Guys like A.J. Klein, Stephon Anthony, who was a first-round pick a couple years ago, can't see the field because he can't cover anybody. Alex Anzalone is a decent-looking rookie, but, again, they're playing three rookies, starting three rookies on this defense. This is go time now for me with this Patriots offense. You know, I gave them last week. Last week, Kansas City came in. They had a great plan. They were certainly the underdogs, and I think that we all got caught up a little bit in the 19-0 talk and took them for granted a little bit in Kansas City. They are a good football team, and they're going to be a problem for a lot of teams, not just the Patriots. I think that Eric Berry's Achilles injury, though, really hurts them against the Pats in particular in terms of playoffs later on in the season. But overall, you know, that's a really good football team. This Saints team is a work in progress. They are definitely in a transition period other than at quarterback. This is a time when the Patriots need to get right. They need to avoid 0-2, and they need to really take it to the Saints team.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what we'll see. I do think the Saints can hurt the Patriots on defense in ways that other teams have and have continued to do. But I sort of look at the Saints defense and I see sort of I know they've brought in a lot of new guys, but the results have been the same for years now. You know, it's almost like they just don't really know what they're doing on that side of the ball, which is really strange because it's been going on for so long. And they've got, you know, just the confusion in the secondary, just the blown coverage and misassignments against Minnesota. And even when they did have guys covered, Bradford was like putting dimes out there.
Yeah, he played great.
Yeah, so and Brady can do the same thing. So I think it's more on the Patriots to sort of figure out, okay, you know, we're looking at this Saints defense with all these problems on it. You know, how can you best exploit it? I think McDaniels is good at sort of figuring that out. And like you said, you know, 40 points is a very realistic outcome here. I mean, for as badly as they played at times against the Chiefs, they had 27. You know,
right?
You know, it's not easy to win in the Superdome and all that stuff. I get all that, but I don't see the Patriots losing this game. I think they're going to be comeback 1-1, and they're going to end up, you know, feeling a lot better about themselves. Because, and the other thing too is, you know, being in the locker room this week, you get the sense, even from the very beginning when you went in there, these guys just want to get back on the field so bad because they know how poorly they played. They feel like there's a certain standard of how a Patriots team should play, and they fell way short of that. In their eyes, they felt they didn't even play as hard as they should have, and to them, that's sort of an inexcusable thing. I think to any player, that's an inexcusable thing. And so they're just sort of chomping at the bit to get back out there and prove that they're not the team they showed on Thursday night.
Would you say that there's more urgency in the locker room now?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of new pieces on this team. And so, you know, it's one of the things that some of them get frustrated with, you know, that just because their team is in the same uniform and some of the guys are the same, it really is a new chemistry each year with the team. Every team is different, even though some of the guys are the same. So they're going based off, you know, what the team should look like based on, you know, their experiences here. But a lot of the guys haven't been here before. And some of the guys that weren't here before commented this week, like Mike Gillisley was like, hey, it definitely feels different this week. It feels different. And, you know, he's always sort of a fresh voice in there I've found since he's come over. So, yeah, I don't think they just sort of turn the page and say, oh, that's whatever. I think last week's performance is a motivator for them. They really don't want to play like that 2 weeks in a row. I don't think any team ever wants to do that, but they feel. I feel like the sort of like the guys, the veterans on the team who have been there for a few years, are sort of, you know, putting the heat on a little bit more this week, and you could sort of sense that in the locker room.
Yeah, you know, after they lost to the Chiefs, all the tropes. You don't want to see Belichick after a loss, and you know they're going to be in for it in practice and all that stuff. And that's all well and good, but now, you know, it comes down, you got to actually do it. You know, you got to actually prove on the field that that's not who you were, and that was, you know, a fluke. The fourth quarter was a fluke, and this is really who the Patriots' identity is and the mental toughness and all that stuff. When Tom Brady, you know, comes out and one of the first things out of his mouth right after the game is that we lacked urgency, we lacked, you know, a sense of mental toughness. That's just so rare from a Patriots team to hear that. And I think the new guys, as you mentioned, is really key. And I wrote about it this week. It's just, you know, a lot of new faces, not only in terms of depth players, but guys that they're expecting huge contributions from are, you know, playing their first couple games as Patriots here. Guys like Brandon Cooks and Stephon Gilmore and the new running backs and, you know, some other guys on this team that, you know, really haven't been around and haven't been here. It's going to take some time for those guys to get a feel for the system, get a feel for that competitiveness, you know, not to, you know, get on some of the other teams. But Stephon Gilmore was just playing in Buffalo. Buffalo is not playing in the Super Bowl in February. You know, they're not playing these games where they have these expectations to be this juggernaut of a team and to come out and destroy every team by 10 points and stuff like that. You know, it's a much different feel, I'm sure, and much different goals, I'm sure, for Stephon Gilmore now than they were last year or 2 years ago or whatever in Buffalo. Brandon Cooks, obviously, New Orleans was most of the time, you know, trying to win now at Breeze and Sean Payton, but even still, you know, I think that he had a little bit of Madden in him where he was like just willing to go out there and get his numbers and you know, be flashy and get deep and stuff like that and make those big catches and whatnot. Now he's got to be a consistent every down player. You know, he's got to not only catch the bombs, but he's also got to get open and catch big third downs and be a threat on every down and in every part of the field. A lot of high expectations for some of these guys, these new guys especially, that I think is something that they're going to have to grow into over the course of the season. And when you look at, you know, some of the other examples of Patriots teams, a lot of people pointing to the 2014 team, you know, where they started 2-2 and they had the big loss to Kansas City in week four, you know, that team was very similar where they had a lot of new pieces and all of a sudden it came together. And then they were clearly for the last, you know, 8 weeks or so of the season, if not the best or the second best to Seattle, you know, pretty much in that season, and the best team in that Super Bowl probably won the game. And, you know, I think that the same case is what could be with this year or it could go the other way. I doubt it goes the other way. We've never seen it go the other way as long as Belichick has been here. So I don't think it will. But right now is kind of, you know, the time where these Patriots kind of had to put up or shut up. You know, there's not going to get any help from anybody, you know, in past years. You know, Richard Seymour is not walking through that door, so to speak. You know, it's a whole – these are – it's up to these guys in the locker room now to you know, start putting wins together and start playing the way that we're used to seeing the Patriots play.
Yeah, well, and I think it kind of reminds me of that that old football maxim, like football doesn't build character, it reveals it. So, like, are you saying, you know, that like them sort of quitting at the end of that game, which is what they were sort of saying after the game, like they didn't fight and all that stuff. Is that revealing a character flaw about this team, or is it something that they can change and build off of? I think that's basically what we're going to find out.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think it's a good question of whether you can create that. Like, is that something that you can build as the season goes on, or is that just something that a team has or doesn't have? You know, I tend to lean more towards the first one, that you could potentially build that as the season goes on. Obviously, the Patriots have a number of players that we know have that type of mental toughness, like Brady and Gronk and whatnot. So I'm not too concerned about it, but I do think that it's interesting. You'd never hear that coming out of the locker room post game about the Patriots, that they didn't play hard enough or they quit or stuff like just not Bill Belichick terminology.
I think more than any injury, more than Ninkovich retiring, I think that's the number one concern coming out of that Chiefs loss is that sort of fortitude that they felt was lacking enough to mention in the press as soon as the game was over. And almost to every single leader on the team saying stuff like that. That was, you know, that's something you have to point to.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Ninkovich retiring, I think we can call him and get him to come out of retirement. I mean, you know, they could probably use him out there. I think he can probably still play, you know, but that's besides the point. Should we talk about Thomas Morstead before we sign off?
I think I covered that quite a bit, you know. But I do think the Pats are just going to do a lot of fair catching this game and letting the ball – bounce into the end zone if they can. I mean, I don't think we want to bore our listeners too much with that.
Well, Thomas Morstead, just for the listeners out there that do care, is a great punter. He has great flight on the ball. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know anything about him. But I do think that it's an interesting thing, and it's one of those little things that can become a really big thing, the punt return or kick returner. You know, you don't think of it as a huge issue, but we know now that since, you know, Cyrus Jones got here and struggled with it, all of a sudden that Cyrus Jones injury, just thinking about it now, it kind of looms large with, you know, Edelman going down too. You know, Cyrus Jones with his struggles doing it, and then Edelman's injuries and not wanting to put Edelman back there and risking him getting hurt, and now Amendola, the same thing. It's one of those spots that is definitely worth continuing to monitor. At the same time, I do think that you know, they can throw a guy back there like Patrick Chung, who can at least field the punt and fair catch it a decent amount and get away with it that way.
But honestly, I do feel like Morstead is really good. He was one of the best players on the Saints in that game against the Vikings. And I was looking at his stats. I mean, his yards per punt is amazing.
He's close to 50 for his career. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, I would think. Yeah. There's not a lot of punters in the Hall of Fame, but if there is going to be more, I would think that someone like him or there's a couple of other really good guys that I'm blanking on right now that have been in the league for a while that deserve Hall of Fame worthiness. But yeah. Bill Belichick, you ask him about anything, just ask him about punters. Apparently,
he loves that. So he adores talking about punters. Like, you're not going to get big returns in this game. You're going to get chances to fair catch it and just play it safe, because he really is. That is sort of kind of only what you get, what he gives you. So I think.
You got a score prediction for us? I hate doing score predictions.
Yeah, no, I haven't thought about it yet, but I would say something along of like a 41 to 21 or a 41-20 type game.
Big blowout.
Yeah, I think so, and I do think the Saints find ways to score. It's just impossible to see them get totally shut down, especially with the state of the Pats' defense right now, which is still in flux. But I just don't see the Saints coming up with a lot of stops. They couldn't against the Vikings, and you know, as poorly as the Pats played at times on offense last week, they're still quite good on offense.
Yeah, that's definitely true. In the first quarter. Really, the first couple of drives of that Kansas City game, I mean, the offense was still humming. You know, they were still moving the ball pretty much at ease. were doing whatever they wanted. The Amendola injury obviously was huge, but now they've had a whole week of practice where they have known pretty much that Amendola probably isn't going to play. And I think that they'll be able to open things up on offense. I'll go 41-27. I'll give the Saints 27 points. I think they probably, Drew Brees probably still passes for over 300 yards against the Patriots defense. If Alex Smith can do it, then I'm pretty confident that Brees can. But I do want to see a big game from Stephon Gilmore in this game. Not necessarily like interceptions wise or anything like that. But going up against Michael Thomas, this seems to be the perfect matchup for why they brought a guy like Gilmore in, was to face these bigger bodied receivers that we see, these freak athletes that we see along around the league, that they're going to face a lot of them coming up here. Guys like Kelvin Benjamin, Mike Evans, Julio Jones, obviously. Michael Thomas is in that type of, he's that of that ilk. And I would just like to see if Gilmore can do something similar to what Xavier Rhodes did. Obviously, I don't think Xavier Rhodes is probably the better player, but I think Gilmore can do some similar stuff. But I'll go 41-27. I definitely think that they can get to 40 offensively. It'll be just a question of is it going to be one of those shootout games, or is the defense going to step up and make some stops? What do you got coming down in the next couple of days before the game?
I have a the next thing I have is for Sunday on what historically the Patriots have done after not just a loss, but sort of a shocking kind of blowout loss to a team they should beat usually, and how the team either responds the week after or, you know, the rest of the season. Is it any indicator of what you'll see to come, and, you know, how they respond, basically, what, especially under Belichick, like what happens after a, sort of a shock to the system of a loss like that?
Yeah, you know, I looked it up just out of curiosity, and they have some more losing streaks than I think that people realize, over the course. Obviously it's a long time. It's, you know, been, what, 18 years or whatever that Belichick has been here. But, it's not like the Patriots after a loss are, 18-0 or something crazy like that, you know. It's definitely can be one of those things where it runs into not more than two game losing streak, but definitely a losing streak. 2015 was a instance where they lost two games in a row twice, just a couple years ago. So, I don't think that they lose this game to the Saints. I'm not saying that. I just think that, it's not as automatic as maybe you would think of Belichick coming off a loss, pissed off Belichick, whatever you want to call it. So it'll be interesting to see how this team rebounds. For me, I probably won't have anything now until after the game, but check out the snap counts will come out late Sunday night, hopefully. And then also advanced stats, do some more breakdowns on Pat's Pulpit, and I'm sure that I'll have something in the Herald at some point too. That's all the time we have for today, I think, right, Adam?
I think we've covered just about everything.
Yeah, I think we're good, but thanks for listening, and check out both Adam and I in the Boston Herald, and pick up a Boston Herald anytime that you can. Sports section, always killing it over there, and thanks for listening, and this has been the Naked Bootleg Podcast.
It's just a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is H to the OV. I used to move snowflakes by the OC. I guess even back then you can call me CEO of the ROCO. Fresh out the frying pan.